and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayishlach. This week, it's not too late, but it's getting there. This is your last chance to sign up for the Winter Executive Learning Seminar in Jerusalem. It will be held this December 24th through 27th, and the subject is Returning to Zion, New Faces, Old Issues. It'll be a great seminar. I urge you to hop on a plane, come on over, and study with the master teachers of Pardes. This week, Vayishlach. This week, Rabbi Mike Feuer discusses Vayishlach. Rabbi Mike Feuer is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Mike Feuer.
You know, when I look at the state of the world today, and in particular, the situation in which we as a people find ourselves right now, it appears to me that one of the most pressing questions that we need to address is, what is Israel? Now, I'm not just speaking of our current embodiment as a nation state, though that does deserve some attention, or even of the state of the Jewish religion, which also could use some love and focus. I'm talking about an idea so big that the three Abrahamic faiths, which make up, by the way, more than half the population of the globe, see it as foundational. This idea of Israel. And fortunately, this week's Parsha provides an answer. Sort of. Vivata Yaakov Livado. Yaakov was left alone. Viavek Ishimo Ad Alot Hashakar. And a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn. You probably know the story. And when he saw that he couldn't overcome him, he wrenched Yaakov's hip and he was strained. And then he said, "Let me go, for dawn is breaking." But Yaakov said back to him, "I won't let you go unless you bless me." And said the other, "What's your name?" And he replied, "Yaakov." Said he, "Your name shall no longer be Yaakov, but Yisrael. Ki sarita im Elohim v'im anashim v'tuchal. You have striven with the divine and the human and have prevailed." So there we go. Yisrael is the one who struggles with God. But where do we actually see him do so? I just heard in those verses that he wrestled with a man, right? Vayavek Ishimo. So, you want to call him an angel? Okay, so shall Yisav, we'll get to it. But before we talk about who exactly Yaakov was struggling with and what it can teach us about his name, we have to touch on the notion of naming itself. And to do that, we go right back to where it all began with the story of Adam. Because the act of naming certainly expresses something essentially human. After all, it is the first thing which Adam does. As it says in Bereshit, Perek Bet, Yud Tet, that's 2:19, V'yitzer Hashem Elokim min ha'adama kol chayat ha'sadeh, that kol of ha'shamayim, right? God made all the animals of the field and all the birds of the heavens. V'yaveh ha'adam lirot. And he brought them to Adam to see what he would call them. And everything which he called them, that is what its name was. Now, in addition to being essentially human, I suspect that the power of naming is also something eminently divine. Because all we know about Adam at this point is that he was created in the image of God. And in a sense, these two aspects, the essentially human and the eminently divine in humanity, parallel the two powers expressed through giving a name. The names we give can be reflective of our own experience of something outside of ourselves. And in that case, they're actually a subjective reality, our own experience, which has more to do with me than what I'm actually looking at. Just think about the parent, like myself, who chose the name of their child before they were even born. If that doesn't have more to do with me than my child, then what does? And in general, this is the side of humanity that uses names to map the world outside of us in relationship to ourselves, right? It's very simple. Table, chair, ceiling, mom, dad, country, right? That's how we locate things in the world. Not just how we locate them, but how we control them. You know, the Midrash says that the reason the verse we just read where Adam names the animals actually begins with their creation, V'yitzer Hashem Elohim min Adam kol ha'chayat min ha'adama, sorry, kol ha'chayat ha'sadeh, that God shaped or created all of the animals of the field out of the earth, even though we already heard the exact same description in the previous chapter, is that in the first chapter, God created the animals. And here in chapter 2, in the lead up to the naming of them, Adam is conquering them. Conquering them by giving their names. And anyone who is engaged in the struggle over fake news, and those of us who are fighting in the trenches of the narrative warfare, know that if you can set the terms of discourse, you've already won the argument. And if you can label someone, you can often control them. In this sense, language is the ultimate tool of objectification. Now, when applied to furniture, that's fine. This thing that my computer is sitting on right now really is a table, and I'm sorry if you find that oppressive. But when we use it to label people, it's a tool of power and potentially subjugation. But there's more to naming than subject-object power games. Naming can also be an act of identifying an essence within other to which we're relating. You know, our sages teach that one of the last bastions of prophecy is actually when an angel whispers a baby's name into the ears of its parents. And I can tell you, looking down at the absolute innocence of the infant face, you may actually see her and not just yourself. And this type of naming comes from a different power. That's the power, the potential that we all have to summon out the subject which lies dormant in that which we see. And when we do this, and I can tell you as both a parent and an educator, it's an incredible experience. When we do it with truth and a depth of engagement and an honest commitment to other, it can lead to a process of co-arising. We both reach a higher state together, because if I can call a name which is not just a projection of my subjective experience, but rather is a seeing of the selfhood in other, then I can help that other emerge. And as Martin Buber presents so beautifully in his work, I and Thou, which if you haven't read it, you should go out and get it now. When I call the name of other in that fashion, then in a deep sense, my own self emerges as well. So these then are the two faces of the human power to name that we can really learn from Adam. It can evoke a subject-object relationship, which is really more about me, and the name I give is reflective of my experience, or it can evoke that precious subject-subject relationship in which I'm actually seeing what's there in the other to be named. Now, what about God? Because it's true that the task of naming the animals was given over to Adam, but there are a few choice moments of divine naming that we can locate in the Torah. And the first, of course, is Avraham. Avraham's transition to Avraham teaches us that when God names something, it's never an act of objectification. It's, in fact, a blessing. And my Rebbe taught me that the real art of blessing is to see something in someone else which they themselves are not accessing, and to call it out, to name it, and in doing so, you make it available. And this is precisely what God does with Avram at the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha. He tells him, leave your home, leave your birthplace, your father's house, go to this land I'll show you. And what? Eseh lecha legoy gadol, v'avarachecha v'gadla shemecha. I'm going to make you a great nation, I will bless you. And I'll make your name great. V'hayeh bracha, and you will be blessing self. And those who bless will be blessed. And those who curse will be. And you, all the families of the earth will be blessed through you. That's a blessed amount of blessing. And when we finally hear of his name change, when God says, Lo yikre od shimcha Avram, v'haya shimcha Avraham, right? Ki av hamon goyim natatiha, you shall no longer be called Avram, but your name shall rather be Avraham, for I make you the father of a multitude of nations. This is the fulfillment not only of the promise that God will bless him, but that he will be blessing itself. He's the father of the many nations who will bless themselves through him, as he was promised. So I would say that God's calling of a name is more than even the human divine piece of seeing an essence and calling it out and helping it be actualized. God's calling of a name is a true transformation. It's taking one thing and making it into another. So much so that the Gemara in Brachot, 13a if you want to look it up, says that anyone who calls Avraham Avram, once his name has been changed, actually transgresses a positive commandment. Yes, God's renaming is a permanent transformation, except in one case. As we heard earlier, Yaakov becomes Yisrael in our parsha because he asks the angel who he has overcome to bless him. And the name means you've struggled with God and men, as we said, but it doesn't stick. Yaakov remains Yaakov, not only through his life, but even in the later books of the prophets, we'll hear all kinds of phrases. My personal favorite, Al Tira, Avdi Yaakov, don't be afraid, O my servant Yaakov. Who's this Yaakov of which you speak? I thought his name was Yisrael. Well, he is Yisrael. I mean, we are B'nai Yisrael, the children of Israel, are we not? Not B'nai Yaakov. That last time we saw the phrase of B'nai Yaakov, we haven't seen it yet in the cycle of the Parshiot, but in the Torah, is the critical moment on his deathbed when he gathers his children around them and reveals to them how their lives will play out, not just as individuals, but as tribes and as a people. It says, Hikavtsu v'shimu b'nei Yaakov, gather together and hear, O sons of Yaakov, those are his literal children, v'shimu el Yisrael avichem, and listen to Israel your father. In the same verse, he is both Yaakov and Yisrael. So then, why doesn't Yaakov's name change stick? And what does the fact that it doesn't teach us about my opening question, what is Israel? So I think that the answer lies in who exactly you believe he was struggling with. You know, the Mekubalim, the mystics, teach us that the angel, or the Ish, sorry, remember it says Ish, was an angel. He was Saro Shel Yaakov. Sorry, got to get this straight, right? That he was an angel. That he was Saro Shel Esav. He was the Yetzahara. He was the Malach HaMavet. He was everything bad you could imagine. Esav, guardian angel. Your evil inclination, the angel of death. And each of these deserve to be thought of on their own. What does it mean that what he struggled with was Esav's guardian angel? Well, on the personal level, it's clear that Yaakov comes out on top. On the more existential level, seeing as it is the same angel who blesses him and gives him a new name at the end, this is Yaakov forcing the world to see him. To see him and call him by name. And his struggle with the evil inclination, with the angel of death, well, that's the struggle with the human condition. With the fear of failure and death, with the fear, in fact, that our name will disappear. And in fact, that means that our name is meaningless to begin with. If I'm not here in four more generations, did I really exist at all? That's a fundamental struggle. But there's one more possibility, which to me seems to leap out of the text. Listen to that line again at the beginning. Vivata Yaakov levado, v'yavek ishimo adalo tashachar. Right? That Yaakov was left alone. And a man struggled with him until the rise of dawn. Huh. If he was left alone, then how could he struggle with a man all night? Who exactly was he struggling with if he was left alone? Isn't the easiest reason that he was struggling with himself? That he was actually, all night long, trying to overcome his previous identity as a deceiver, as Yaakov, the one who grabbed his brother by the heel, the one who always takes that end run around the realities that he's facing in order to get at what he's after, the one who does the switcheroo on his father, who strong-arms his brother into selling the birthright, the one who has come to realize that any indirect approach to his destiny is really an avoidance of who he actually is. I mean, after all, is he Ish Tam Yoshev Oalim? Is he this innocent one who sits in the tents? Or is he Yaakov, the guy who's always looking for the crooked path? So, in light of these three struggles, what is Israel? First of all, I would say Israel is a name that our actions can earn us, which we'll know are true when they're called out by the world, by Esav's angel. When we struggle and win on our way to bringing the world closer to its redeemed state, when we struggle with God and when we struggle with man, then the world will see us as Yisrael. Yisrael is also a story which encapsulates the human experience. It's not just about us. It's about a larger struggle of what it is to be human and struggle with that fear of the limitations of death, with that fear of the limitations of my desires and my abilities, and yet to come out with the sense that those very limitations are what bring us our highest moments. Remember, Rebbe Meir teaches that when God looked at the world and said it was tov ma'od, that it was very good, that's the moment when the angel of death was born. And finally, I would say that Yisrael is for each of us the ideal self toward which we are always striving. And to remove those obstacles that cause us to avoid the very clear reality of who we desire to be that is somewhat always staring us in our face when we're alone and struggling with ourselves. You know, just as a last thought, the sages teach in the Gemara and Tanit, Yaakov Avinu lo met. Yaakov never actually dies. But we do know that Yisrael is buried next to his wife Rivka. He's waiting in the tomb of the patriarchs in the holy city of Hebron. Yaakov is every man, every person. He's the human experience. He's us as a people intergenerationally. He's you and I. And therefore, he never dies. That challenge of what it is to be an individual, a people, a species, that's not going away. Yisrael? Well, that's what lies on the other side of the horizon, waiting to awaken at the redemption. Be it the great day for all of us, let it be soon, let it be now, or be it my own personal salvation, found through struggling to be who I dream that I really am. And just remember, as we say, Israel is real.
Thank you, Rabbi Fuhrer. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.